Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the home of militant moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today while he's on assignment. Now, things are really coming to a head over in Israel and Gaza. As Israel's operation against Hamas in Gaza continues, and the cry from defenders of the Palestinians and apologists for Hamas and so on, that Israel is being unacceptably brutal and committing genocide, and it's a human rights tragedy and everything else, are intensifying. And next week is the UN General Assembly. And at the UN General Assembly, which is the big confab where all the member states come together and they make big speeches, this was the venue at which some years ago, former President Barack Obama famously declared, "The future must not belong to those who slander the Prophet of Islam." So that's the stage we're talking about getting set here. And at the UN General Assembly, several European nations have said they plan to come out and essentially unilaterally create a Palestinian state, whether Israel likes it or not. They're going to step forward and declare that they now recognize the non-existent state of Palestine. There's no such state. They have nothing resembling a coherent government. They're basically, most of Palestine is run by the violent rape and murder gang of Hamas, and the rest of Palestine is run by the slightly less violent terrorists of the Palestinian Authority. And that's what the Europeans are going to come out and say is now a country. They're going to just, by fiat, announce that Palestine exists now, and Israel has to start treating it as a legitimate nation state. And the Israelis are saying, of course, don't do this. This is terrible. Among other things, you're rewarding Hamas by doing this. And Hamas is not shy. These terrorists are not shy about saying they think this prospective UN action is a huge victory for them and a vindication of the October 7th atrocities. They say that process basically began with them launching a rape and murder spree against Israeli civilians, which started this whole war, and that if it ends with the UN essentially creating a state and handing it to them, there could be no greater victory for these terrorists. That's exactly what they wanted all along, and they don't give a damn about all the innocent people that died along the way. They're going to get what they want. And it's almost mind-boggling to a lot of observers that anybody would do this. Belgium, I think, is the latest country to say they would do it. It's at least half a dozen significant European powers. I think France is in the mix. And you've got to say, why in the world would you people give a state to terrorists after they launched a war by perpetrating unspeakable atrocities? And there are, you know, some answers to that, one of which is that a lot of these rulers do not like Israel or Jews. And a lot of their people, an increasing number of people on the hard left, are very loathsome of Israel and of Jews and very supportive of the Palestinian cause. And in the case of some of these European states, not to put too fine a point on it, but they don't really run some of their own cities anymore. They have been colonized. And the people who have colonized much of Europe and taken it over do not like Israel or the Jews, shall we say. And so if you are a European leader, you're looking at a lot of problems in your streets and violence and so on if you don't performatively denounce Israel for the operation in Gaza. So that's a lot of what's going on here. Another reason why things are hitting a fever pitch is that Hamas is in really bad shape right now. The Israelis just took out one of their spokespeople, one of the most visible members, surviving members of the Hamas terrorist gang. He's not surviving anymore. They got this guy. And they're just racking up the kills against Hamas leadership left and right. And they're proposing to move in a big way to the area where Hamas's last remaining tunnels and secret caches of food and weapons and so forth are stored. And if they do an operation like that and it works out well, that could be pretty close to eliminating Hamas. I mean, it's really hard to get rid of completely a ideological or terrorist organization, but you can destroy it so thoroughly that it loses its effectiveness. And one of the reasons why is that the people who would otherwise be inclined to support that organization start thinking of them as beaten losers, and they lose a lot of their allure. That happened to the Islamic State, if you'll recall. The Islamic State was the biggest, baddest, coolest terror gang on the planet during the years when it was recruiting people hand over fist. And we had stories popping daily during the Obama years about the Islamic State recruiting operatives all across Europe and the United States. And they were out there pulling off high-profile terrorist murders left and right. And they were all joining ISIS because they looked like winners. They were conquering territory. They had a caliphate. They were talking about their destiny to rule the world and how they're getting closer to it. They had a website. They had a magazine. They looked like a pretty cool outfit to people that were disgruntled, people that were Islamic fanatics, people that were just disgruntled citizens of the Western world, young people that felt dissolute, didn't know what to do with their lives. ISIS was highly adept at reaching out to those people and recruiting them. And a big part of the recruiting pitch was, look at us. We're big, we're bad, we're a caliphate, we take slaves, we're the bee's knees. And then Trump killed their leader. Remember, Trump ordered this strike that took out the caliph of the Islamic State, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And U.S. Special Forces took that guy down. And that was pretty much it. I mean, the Islamic State still exists, and they're still dangerous, no doubt about it. They're still very active in different parts of the world. They're trying to reconstitute themselves in different parts of the world. But they went down really hard in Syria and Iraq, the main areas they were operating in. And have you noticed that they don't recruit people every damn day in Europe and America anymore? You don't have daily stories about the latest kid that decided ISIS was awesome and decided to join the Islamic State and blow up a school or whatever they were going to do. They didn't do that anymore. It really hurt their recruiting efforts. And a similar dynamic could be in store for Hamas. If Israel makes them look like a bunch of chumps and they're all dead and their leader's been wiped out, they risk losing something of their grip over their subject captive people. Now, that's going to be tough in the case of the Palestinians, because the Palestinians are the most debased, brainwashed people alive on the earth today. You're talking about generations of people, of children, that have been raised in an absolute pressure cooker of propaganda and lethal hatred. And a big reason why the Palestinians were subjected to this, I would say, Nazi-like treatment by Arabs, by Muslims, by Islamic terrorists that were determined to make them bitter, resentful, homicidal, suicidal as an entire people. A big part of the reason why this was done over these past many decades was to create the impression among Western policymakers, among people around the world, that Hamas, Palestinian terrorism, they can't be beaten. Their will never break. They will fight to the last baby. They will strap a bomb to that baby and throw them at the last Israeli they can reach. They will never give up. And by creating that sense, that impression that they're essentially unbeatable, that their will and their morale will never break, and they will never stop until they've got their own state, that has led a lot of people on the West to conclude, especially in your campus bull sessions, your dorm rooms, your faculty and whatnot, a lot of those people have concluded that therefore we should skip ahead and cut to the chase and just force Israel to give them a state, because it's going to happen anyway. I guarantee you, if you get a lot of the people who seem to be nonsensically agitating to reward rape gangs by giving them a state, and you sit them down in a quiet room and ask them to explain themselves, a lot of them are going to come back to that point. They're going to say, look, this will never be over. I hate the Israelis. They conquered the territory, yada, yada, yada. They'll have whatever they have to delegitimize the existence of Israel and express their foaming hatred of it. And then they'll say, and also, this can never end until the Palestinians get a state. That's obvious. They will blow up pizzerias until the end of time, unless we give them a state. So let's just do that. And then maybe we can have some peace. And the Israelis, in addition to not wanting to reward Hamas in particular for its bloody atrocities of October 7th, the Israelis will always tell you that's a terrible idea because that really weakens our security. And these people are not interested in just having a state. I mean, they want a state, but when they say a state, they mean from the river to the sea, to quote their famous slogan, which means kill all the Jews. That means no Israel. And they say they'll never stop until they get that. And if we put a terror state with full functionality and funding and weapons right in our midst, in the middle of our territory, our tiny little country of Israel is going to be fatally compromised. And that's one reason they do not want to budge on that point. So this is all going to come to a head. If you look at the way a lot of the celebrity lefties are handling this right now, there is a shrill desperation in their voices. They know Hamas is on the edge of getting a real defeat handed to it, and they can't stand it. And they think the UN is their last chance. For example, just to name a name, this actor Hugh Bonneville, he's in Downton Abbey. He shows up at the red carpet premiere and starts blathering on about a Palestinian state. I mean, Hugh, nobody cares about your opinion of a Palestinian state. They want to watch Downton Abbey. But here he was just ranting and raving. And never once did he mention October 7th or why there's a war in Gaza at all. So, I mean, this is all bubbling to a head next week, and it's going to be a pretty dramatic UN General Assembly. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
This summer's heat waves brought higher UV indexes across the country, and that's cause for concern. Dr. Raza Bukhari, CEO of Medicus Pharma, explains.
90% of non-melanoma skin cancers are related to exposure to ultraviolet radiation from the sun.
Even with regular use of sunscreen, high UV rays can cause significant damage. That's why getting a professional skin check could save your life. And new treatments on the horizon are poised to revolutionize the way skin cancer is treated.
We are currently in phase 2 trials of a non-invasive skin cancer treatment called SkinJet. This small microneedle transdermal patch provides a relatively painless, cost-effective treatment for basal cell skin cancer. So far, in our interim analysis, more than 60% of patients achieved complete clinical clearance.
For more, visit medicuspharma.com.
The spirit of Fred Rogers lives on when two hit spinoffs of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood come together for the first time. The Emmy-winning puppet series Don Quixote will welcome friends from the Emmy-winning Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood in a new crossover special premiering August 11th on PBS Kids. In Daniel Tiger Visits Someplace Else, Daniel Tiger meets Don Quixote, and the new pals embark on an epic adventure full of fun and surprises. The special episode even includes a new version of the classic Fred Rogers song, Look and Listen, which encourages young viewers to ask questions to get to know someone better. Don Quixote co-executive producer Kristen DiQualo.
Bringing Don Quixote and Daniel Tiger together in this special has been a really exciting way for us to build on the legacy of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which inspires everything that we do. And I can't wait for families to see Daniel in the colorful, joyful world of Someplace Else with Donkey and her pals.
The Don Quixote crossover special begins streaming Monday, August 11th on PBS Kids.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. By the way, please be sure to swing by our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. President Trump just did something that I wanted him to do the last time I had this very microphone in my hand. I said it would be a good idea if he were to send the National Guard and federal troops into cities in red states that are controlled by blue governments that have high crime rates, and those state governors would be happy to have them, and why not help out people in the states that are actually voting for Donald Trump instead of fighting with the pro-crime Democrats that run cities like Chicago? And lo and behold, President Trump said he's going to do exactly that, and he's going to send federal assistance to New Orleans. In Louisiana, which is a great example of a blue city in a red state. And the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, very happy to have this federal assistance. And Trump is saying that, you know, if only the Democrat governors of states like Illinois would ask for help, we could straighten their streets out in like 2 weeks. I think that's exactly the time frame that he mentioned. So a lot of interesting questions to be asked about all this and about both the politics and the practicality of it. And here with us to take a look at it is Donald Wilkie, an entrepreneur and expert in the intricate relationship between government autonomy and freedom, and author of Freedom Revealed, A Simple, Elegant System. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thanks for having me.
The politics of this are fascinating, and I think there is a solid practical argument to be had here as well. But Donald Trump has been just masterfully pushing these Democrat governors to the point where they look ridiculous. I mean, you've got J.B. Pritzker walking down the street moaning that he wants the crime to stay high in Chicago. How dare the federal government come in here and clean up my city? I mean, these Democrats are basically telling their own citizens, I don't care if you get robbed or murdered. I'm not going to let Donald Trump embarrass us by coming in here and cleaning up our streets. And now Trump is turning to a friendly governor and saying, hey, I'd like to come help your city. And the governor says, oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's do this. I mean, the politics of this are just lining up in a just appalling way for Democrats.
Yes. And I would like to take everybody back to the basics. Why do we have government in the first place? Well, when we formed up as groups way back 20, 30,000 years ago in tribes, we needed some way to take care of the bad actors. You know, anarchy had to be replaced because it wasn't working. And so we form government to prevent anarchy, to protect the citizens from their neighbors and from other tribes as well. Well, today we have a Chicago, for example. It's got a mayor, it's got a city council, it's got a police force, it's got all sorts of laws, but they don't enforce the laws. What's the difference between that and original anarchy that government was meant to stop in the first place?
Well, right. And one of the big reasons why you get anarchy, and I see a lot of people refusing to accept this, is that the people inclined to violate the law and live in an anarchic fashion are no longer afraid of being arrested. When they have no plausible fear that the law will do anything to them, they run wild. And all these people talking about addressing root causes and showering them with money are completely missing the boat about what causes this phenomenon.
Yeah, well, the problem with anarchy is you can't have a marketplace. A marketplace is distorted. I mean, you need goods and services. People want to trade. Your stores leave. You know, people can't go to work because they're afraid their house is going to get broken into. And what you do is you develop a huge population of dependents. And this is what we're seeing. And if I didn't know better, I'd almost say the people in the Democrat cities are doing it on purpose.
There are people who wonder how much of this is manufactured, particularly when you look at the example of D.C. And here you had a city that, by all accounts, was one of the most lawless and desperate places in the country, very embarrassing for the national capital. And Trump really did clean up that one-horse town in about 2 weeks by just cracking down on crime, to the point where the mayor of D.C., Muriel Bowser, who is no friend of Trump or Republicans, is now admitting that Trump made a big difference and she doesn't want this crackdown on crime to end.
Yeah, the national government, our national government, the home of our experiment in freedom, was relentlessly out of control. And I have some understanding of that being from the city of Detroit. I had a business in Detroit, and the crime got so bad that me and everybody else moved out. And, of course, a few years later, Detroit went bankrupt. Detroit just did it first, but I'm convinced that there was a purposeful reason that they let crime go on like crazy because they wanted to kill the city. That's my belief.
I think there's also an element of pro-crime on the left that wants to subjugate the middle class in general. They're very interested in destroying the middle class. They don't like the idea of a lot of people having money and capital and being invested in capitalism and demanding their freedom. And a great way to subdue the middle class is to terrorize them. And if you unleash floods of criminals onto the streets to the point where commerce becomes difficult, investment is difficult, and people live in fear every day of their lives, well, they're not going to start thinking their freedom is super valuable or feeling any deep connection to the capitalist system anymore.
Yeah, well, there's two ways of terrorizing people. One is anarchy and letting the natives run wild, and the other is despotism. And you have examples of Stalin and Castro and Pol Pot, but those are both ways of terrorizing people, and those are both reasons why the United States was founded. I mean, our Constitution was meant to stop government from becoming despotic. And, of course, we had English common law at the time, and we were supposed to enforce it. And we had a huge rise in prosperity in the United States that like nobody had ever seen before. But the problem is when the people are terrified, the marketplace stops working. And when the marketplace stops working, you don't get prosperity, you get poverty.
And, you know, poverty also leads to distrust, and only a high-trust society can really function. Low-trust societies function in a very different way that has a real human cost attached to it. I was fascinated the other night to watch Stephen Colbert on his show. He's launched this profanity-laced tirade at Trump for daring to say Chicago is the murder capital of the country. And Colbert said, no, it isn't. It's number 20 or something like that. Turns out they're both wrong. It's number 7. You know, the study Colbert was citing was flawed. But, you know, isn't that sums all this up, really, is you've got this loudmouth comedian playing paperwork games and quibbling over semantics, and you're in Chicago living in terror from crime and watching people get murdered day and night, and here's this guy saying, you know what, don't worry about it. You're only the number 7 murder city in the country, so sit down and be quiet.
Well, again, the main purpose of government is to protect the citizens. I mean, that's what it's all about. We formed government. We invented government. We've instituted government for a purpose. That was to keep ourselves safe. We want safety. And if nobody's enforcing the law, you don't have safety. And you're right. People soon realize that they take advantage of it. I mean, look at all the stores in Chicago that are closed, in San Francisco that are closed. I mean, Detroit, where I'm from, really turned into a ghost town. I mean, they put billions of dollars, Illich and Dan, oh, I forget Dan's last name, but trying to get Detroit back. But once it goes down, it's awfully hard to get it back.
Well, the very value of money diminishes in a low-trust environment. When there's crime and everything's a racket and the government is corrupt and nobody trusts anybody, you can dump all the money you want into a place like that, and it's just not going to get any better. So I think city, every country, every nation needs the rule of law as a foundation upon which everything else is built. Donald Wilkie, entrepreneur. Thanks for joining us. Author of Freedom Revealed, A Simple, Elegant System. Thanks for being with us today. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Substance use and mental health often go hand in hand. Research shows that teens who struggle with their mental health are more likely to use drugs and alcohol. That's why the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention launched the Free Mind campaign to help prevent substance use and overdose among youth ages 12 to 17. As a parent or caregiver, you play a powerful role. Staying connected with your teen can reduce their risk for drug use. Before you talk to them about drugs, talk to them about how they're really doing. And remember, empathy is key. Ask questions, listen without judgment, lead with compassion, let them know they're not alone. Because sometimes an open and honest conversation between you and your teen can make all the difference. Learn how to start a conversation at cdc.gov cdc.gov/freemind/parents. That's cdc.gov/freemind/parents. Sponsored by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Circle K is expanding its membership rewards program, Inner Circle, throughout the Lone Star State beginning on Wednesday, September 3rd. Free to join, customers can now become members to get fuel discounts, drink deals, and more. To celebrate, Circle K is hosting a Fuel Day pop-up on Thursday, September 4th. Customers can get 40 cents off per gallon of fuel from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. local time. Inner Circle members will have early access starting at 7 a.m. Members can enter their phone number at the pump or inside at checkout to access the savings. First-time members can save 25 cents per gallon of fuel on their first five fill-ups and have access to discounted drinks. Members also get personalized offers and exclusive deals throughout the year. Sign up at CircleK.com/inner-circle or enter your mobile number at checkout to enroll via text. Learn more about the Fuel Day on Thursday, September 4th at CircleK.com/TX-Fuel-Day.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor with Breitbart News. I want to try to tie the things we've been talking together this morning about into one story here. You have Israel, Gaza, the Palestinians, and then you have what we were just talking about with President Trump sending out the federal authorities to police these lawless cities, and some of the Democratic governors violently resisting this, some of them actually literally urging violent resistance to President Trump trying to come in and clean up their streets. There is a common thread running through these stories of international and homegrown anarchy and dissolution, and the effort to bring something resembling the rule of law
back into situations that have become lawless and anarchic. And it is an ugly reality of human life. This is just one of those things that's true, and it may not sound pretty, but it's always been true. And that is that all conflict is a contest of will. When you get right down to it, every conflict, violent or not, kinetic or not, in the history of the human race, has boiled down to a test of will. And you don't usually win any conflict by eliminating your enemy. It's not like a chess game where you take the last piece or something and you win. Now, that's not how it works. The way conflicts end is when one side no longer has the will to resist. And that's a big difference. You know, that's military strategy is oriented upon breaking the will of the enemy to continue fighting. And the way you do that, of course, has changed many times over the course of history as warfare has changed, as the nature of wars, the weapons involved and so on change. But look back at World War II. World War II was the nice war. Supposedly, everybody basically agrees, with the exception of a few outlying rogue historians, revisionists, whatnot. But for most of the culture of the Western world, everybody agrees that World War II was a good war, and the bad guys were as evil as they come, the Nazis, Imperial Japan, which was absolutely brutal. And everything we did was okay to win those wars, give or take a nuclear bomb or two, because you still have people that think the war was justified and the nuclear bombing of Japan was not. But, you know, basically that was the good war. And that war, it was not about taking every Nazi soldier and lining them up in a battlefield, and then we all went out there and beat them up and they all surrendered. That's not what happened. I mean, that was an industrial war with attacks on civilians of stunning magnitude, and not just the nuclear bombing. Arguably, the nuclear bombing, especially the first one, the little boy, that was not as bad as some of the other bombings we inflicted on Japanese and German cities during the war. Without nukes, we inflicted unimaginable casualties on people in the course of that war, on civilians, on civilian infrastructure. We were firebombing cities in Japan, and cities in Japan are made out of wood. So when you firebomb them, they burn. And we were doing that. We had to. There was no other way to win. We had to break the will of Imperial Japan to continue fighting. And I'm sure if you have made any study of the nuclear bombings, by now you have come across contemporaneous estimates from World War II of military experts and strategists saying that if it wasn't for the nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which just overwhelmed the Japanese, they couldn't believe what they were seeing, and they surrendered. The Japanese High Command threw in the towel. But if we hadn't done that, we would have fought an invasion of Japan that would have cost millions of lives on both sides, because the Japanese Empire had a great deal of will to fight, and they didn't feel broken just because we started bombing them on their home turf. They wanted to keep going, and you can't win unless you break the will to fight. And that's true to this day with, say, the Palestinian terrorist groups and Gaza. The whole reason why the Palestinians were brainwashed into basically a permanently psychopathic civilization is because the people who did that to them wanted to convince the rest of the world that until we get what we want, which is supposedly a Palestinian state and actually no more Israel, but until we get what we want, we can never be broken. These people will never stop fighting. They'll never stop killing. They wanted to get the elites around the world to say, well, Israel's just going to have to give them what they want, because otherwise the violence can never end. And we all want the violence to end, don't we? That's breaking of will. There are different ways to break people's willpower. And that is something, a great deal, as we were just talking about with Donald Wilkie, about what happens domestically when you see left-wingers given control of cities and how they invariably deluge you with violent crime. And then they tell you there's nothing that can be done about it. Sorry, you're going to have to put up with an awful lot of murders if you live in Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York. Any of these big cities, just shrug, you know, that's the way it is. There's going to be a lot of crime, going to be a lot of death. Here's a report we cooked with some phony numbers last year that says crime is down 0.25%. So what's Donald Trump complaining about? That's the crap you get out of these hideously misgoverned cities. And a lot of this is a deliberate policy choice to break the will of the residents of those cities and of the middle class by convincing them, once again, look at the logic, look at the rhetoric. There's no way you can win. There's going to be violent crime all over the place. It's never going to get any better. Maybe if you let us confiscate all the guns, it'll get a little better. If you give us authoritarian, totalitarian level control over all firearms, then maybe we can make crime a little better. You'll still get stabbed and raped and beaten, but you won't get shot. That's the story you get out of these people. That's literally their position on crime. And inherent in everything you will ever hear a left-winger, a Democrat say about the high crime rates in their cities is this idea that it can't get any better. It just can't. There's only so good you can get because some of these neighborhoods are just going to be full of criminals. And when you say, why is that? They say, well, it's society's fault. It's your fault. It's income inequality. That's what it is. It's racism, systemic racism. That's why. But the basic conception here, the basic message is never going to get any better. You can't win, law-abiding, hardworking, middle-class America. You can't win the war on crime. And then along comes Donald Trump, and he wins it in 2 weeks flat in Washington. Just stomps him into the dirt and proves these people have been lying to you all along. There was no reason to put up with the endemic crime in D.C., and it had gotten really bad in D.C. If you haven't been there in 10 or 15 years, you don't know how bad it got before Donald Trump rode into town and cleaned it up. But it was just awful. And Trump cracked down on it. And he did it with vigorous prosecution, with a strong showing of law enforcement, National Guard on the streets. And now he wants to send the National Guard to other cities. And here we are changing the calculation of the will to fight. What Trump is doing, and I think one of the reasons the Democrats are going hysterical to the point of just gibbering incoherence over Trump's threats to come in and clean up their cities too, it's not just because it's going to embarrass them and make them look bad, because it will, but one of the reasons that people like J.B. Pritzker are losing their minds, governor of Illinois, over Trump coming in and cleaning up a city like Chicago, is that it changes the calculation of despair that they rely on to hold power. If the people who live in Chicago start thinking it doesn't have to be this way, we don't have to live in squalor, we don't have to put up with constant crime, we don't have to be one of the murder capitals of the country and of the world, we can do better if we just demand more. Well, where are Democrats then? They're doomed. They're going to have to start admitting that you don't have to live the way they told you you have to live. You're going to start regaining your will to fight. And that's the sea change that I think has been sweeping over the country ever since the Biden interregnum ended. Joe Biden never should have been in the White House. It was absurd. And his 4 years were a clownish, disastrous, foolish interregnum that never should have been there in the first place. And in the time since that, as these new Trump months have gone by, it's only been months, remember, it hasn't even been a whole year yet. But as these Trump months have gone by, what Trump is basically saying to the middle-class, hardworking, law-abiding citizens is you can win. You don't have to give up. You don't have to accept what they told you you have to accept on the border. Joe Biden looked you right in the eye, lied to his teeth, him and everybody in his administration, Alejandro Mayorkas, his disaster of a Homeland Security Secretary. These people looked you right in the eye and lied through their teeth to you and said, there's no way to secure the border. It's impossible. We can't possibly stop the flow of millions across our border. Nothing can be done. You're just going to have to give up and accept that that's the way it is in America now. And Trump fixed it in a couple of weeks, that fast, and proved that these people were lying to you the whole time by claiming they were powerless. That's good for immigration. That's good for American national security. But it's even better for American morale. Because for the first time in a long time, a lot of people in the country, a lot of working people, are regaining their morale, their will to fight. They're looking around and saying, you know what? I don't have to put up with the crap that I've been served for so long. I don't have to admit that men are women if they say they're women, or else the mob's going to come after me. The thought police are going to kill me if I don't go along with this guy in a dress claiming he's a woman. You don't have to. You don't have to submit to that lunacy. You can stand up. You can fight. People have, I think, a growing awareness of how close their will was to being broken. Hardworking, law-abiding, American citizens, immigrants too. It's affecting them too, legal immigrants. Now, that's a big one. Legal immigrants are becoming emboldened to say, no, we don't like illegal immigration. We don't like crime. What the heck are you talking about? We did everything right. Why are we supposed to want a bunch of illegal alien drug gangsters to come in and take our neighborhood? It's very moralizing. It's very empowering to discover that you're not alone and that you don't have to put up with the garbage you've been fed for so many years. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
We have an active government relations program. They're very much involved in legislative work to not only improve the ADA, but to strengthen enforcement. The bottom line is, a law with no enforcement is no law at all. But it's not just about legislative work. It's really just about public education. We want the general public, we want policymakers, we want business owners to understand that they have a role in knocking down barriers and making the world more accessible. We have an active campaign going on right now. Barriers still exist. If you go to our website, pva.org, you can find information about various types of barriers that are out there through our PSAs. We have a petition that we want to send to the United States Congress that calls for improved enforcement of the ADA. And ultimately, we just want to get everyone in the game. We want everyone to have a stake in knocking down the barriers that still exist, because we believe in accessibility for all. To learn more, you can go to pva.org/barriersstillexist.
We know summers are packed with activities, and Whataburger's got you covered with big flavor and big value. For a limited time this summer, you can order more for less with our bigger, better bundles. Just order your favorite Whatameal, and you can add on a bonus meal. You can add on a $4 kids Whatameal, a $5 double meat junior Whatameal, or $6 nine-piece Whata wings. Or if you're just feeding the kids, these bundles work for kids meals too. Just order a kids meal, and you can add on another one for just $4. Really is the perfect way to make sure everyone is fed and happy this summer. We've also got Whataburger's brand new Prickly Pear Raspberry Water Fresher. It's a bright, refreshing mix of zesty lemon, real raspberry, and a hint of prickly pear. If you haven't downloaded the app yet, download it now. We are full on into our summer of savings mode, and we've got really special things coming up for our 75th birthday on August 8th. For more information, you can visit Whataburger.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
it's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. A federal appeals court has ruled against President Trump's legal authority to impose tariffs, and that decision, if not struck down, could sabotage a great deal of President Trump's trade agenda and put us in a very uncomfortable position as far as government financing and federal debt and so forth stands. Here with us to talk about it is Robert Romano, Executive Director of Public Policy at Americans for Limited Government. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
It's great to be on again, John. Thanks for having me.
I saw you have a great piece on this at the Daily Torch about this ruling against tariffs and how they could knock out, what, $500 billion in funding that's actually driving the deficit down for the first time in 15 years, I think. The deficit is going to go down because of this. And if this court decision stands and blows the tariffs up, we lose all that money. And I don't know, do we have to write rebate checks to the people that paid the tariffs? How's that even going to work?
I don't think it's going to work out very well at all. Although I am confident that the president, under the laws that Congress has enacted under the Economic Emergencies Act and other acts going back almost a century now, that the president can definitely regulate foreign trade. He's the chief diplomat. He conducts foreign relations. He's using tariffs as leverage in negotiations. It's already resulted in a number of trade deals in Europe with the UK, with Vietnam, South Korea, and so forth, at Japan. I think that we're seeing some of the benefits of this approach, not merely with better trade deals and reorienting the U.S. economic posture abroad, where countries aren't going to be able to take advantage of us any longer, and we're going to have more access to foreign markets for our own exports. We're raising considerable revenue, $500 billion by the latest estimate of annual tariffs that will come in because of Trump's trade approach. That's going to reduce the deficit. We're, you know, $37 trillion in debt. The national debt's been growing on average 8% a year, every year since 1980. At that rate, it'll be over $76 trillion in about 10 years and $100 trillion just a few years after that. And we don't want to find ways to increase revenue. Well, it's going to be difficult right now. A lot of, about 900,000 baby boomers are leaving the labor force every single year. Some more number more than that are hitting 65 and starting to collect Social Security and Medicare. It's leading to job shortages. It's leading to lower unemployment rates as well. So there's not all bad. But it also means that we're going to be dishing out more benefits than we're taking in via revenue, via payroll taxes or anything like that. Trump has identified an actual key area where revenues were actually rather low, which was in tariff collections. Fortunately, in increasing tariffs, we have not seen a commensurate increase in inflation, largely because I ascribe it to countries continuing to depreciate their currencies. Also, exporters can lower prices in response to the tariffs to remain competitive. So that doesn't hit the consumers too much, but it is helping the Treasury out. So why not continue doing that? And why are the courts interfering with what is principally an Article II responsibility, foreign policy? I don't think they should be doing that. The Supreme Court should strike this down.
You know, I am a big fan of bringing this down and getting federal government finances under control. I didn't really want to do it with tax increases, including tariffs, which are essentially a form of tax. I really think the problem is spending, and that has to be addressed very, very vigorously. But if this federal court's ruling stands, it's going to do a lot of damage to the public trust. And my whole life, I've been trying to guess when we're going to hit the breaking point of insolvency, where the whole thing goes kablooey. And man, I think we're pretty close. I don't think we have a lot of time left to try to get government finances under control. And as you pointed out, I think one of the better long-term arguments for Trump's approach is that we do have to reconfigure our economy to account for people retiring, for the baby boom generation passing, for current demographics in the United States, which are not great, but not as bad as some other countries, and AI, the rise of electronics that's looking to transform our job market. We have to change the way we do business. And I think Trump is trying to do that.
I think so. And on the revenue point, I think that if we had kept fertility where it was, or fertility had stayed where it was about 1960 when birth control was adopted, about 3.6 babies per woman. That's like 1.6 babies per woman. You want to talk about the budget deficit? That is the budget deficit. There are tens of millions of fewer taxpayers who were never born, basically, in our economy. The economy would be much larger. The population would be much larger. The budget would practically be balanced right now if we had just kept moving towards surplus population and be fruitful and multiply, basically. We stopped doing that. Now we're $37 trillion in debt. We'll be $100 trillion in debt very, very shortly. We have a revenue problem. The amount of Social Security we're dishing out, the Medicare, these are not exorbitant benefits, and they would have been more than well paid for if we had just kept on having kids.
That's an excellent point. Now, the latest job report just came out. It was not pretty. It was a really bad job report. It's hard to find a silver lining in almost anything, including the downward revisions to previous months. What do you attribute this jobs report's deficiencies to? And do you think some part of it is because of the trade war and because of economic uncertainty?
I think that the establishment survey tends to lag as an indicator. I tend to pay more attention to the household survey. I've been noting in the household survey, unemployment level has been increasing by about 1.6 million since January of 2023. That's been going on for 32 months now. The record is 39 months in the early 1990s recession under George Herbert Walker Bush. That went on for 39 months, where you went from the low of unemployment to the peak of unemployment. You're about 32 months into this right now. So I think that whatever expansion of unemployment we're seeing might almost be almost over. It's coming in response to hitting peak inflation and then demand cooling after that. That always leads to higher unemployment. And the end result in 100% of cases in the post-war period has been a recession. We could be heading towards that right now. But it might not be so bad because the baby boomers keep on retiring. This leads to a greater demand for labor to fill it in. And right now you're only at 4.3% unemployment. Every other one of those other periods where you had an increasing period of unemployment, unemployment landed north of 5%. So you might not even hit 5% in this cycle. But suffice to say, the end result of every one of these cycles was a recession when you come off of peak inflation like that. This has really been going on for a few years now. What we're seeing right now is the end result of the bad inflation we just went through.
I heard a really interesting suggestion the other day that got me thinking. Someone said Trump ought to put heavy tariffs on overseas call centers and outsourcing of tech support and things like that, because there is a huge pool of untapped household workers in the United States, people like single moms and young people who would be happy to do that work if they could, but they've been permanently underbid by outsourcing it to countries that pay pennies on the dollar of what you get in the United States. Do you think that's the kind of thing we should maybe think about doing as we change our workforce? I'll give you the last word.
Sure. I mean, India hasn't exactly been helpful with Trump's foreign policy and trying to get peace in Ukraine. So maybe some tariffs are in order. The courts will let us.
That's true. The courts are going to be an issue on that. And boy, you brought up the magic word there, because India is one of the great question marks still hanging over the trade war. And I think we might be headed for some answers there within the next month or so. We'll soon see. Robert Romano, Executive Director of Public Policy at Americans for a Limited Government. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward. Thanks for joining us on this hour of the Alan.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.